Hi, and welcome to Season 2 of Half-Wits and Failed Crits. I have with me the returning crew from Season 1, Kylie.
Hi.
Louise.
Hi.
Mary.
Hey.
And Laura.
Hello.
And we also have a new half-wit joining us. Say hello, Bobby.
That would be me. Hello.
So, along with the addition of a new player, we're going to be playing a new game system. It's called Stars Without Number by Kevin Crawford, a science fiction role-playing game that sets our players in a sandbox of a star sector where, as we'll probably find out fast, anything's possible. This is one of the reasons I was so drawn to Stars Without Number, and there's a huge emphasis on the GM creating a world and letting the players determine nearly all of the events. So it's going to be crazy. We played a prequel game of this already, which I'm not sure if it's going to be uploaded before this or after as like a bonus thing, but it's very player determined. I have to improv a lot of what you guys respond to.
We're going to destroy your world pretty much is what's going to happen.
Good thing I made many of them. All right, so to quickly talk about Stars Without Number, they have a history that they give, and I think that'll be good to start out with. So in the Stars Without Number lore, it starts with year 2108. This is when they developed a spike drive. Humanity moves almost overnight from a handful of science stations in the solar system's inner worlds to all-out interstellar operation. In 2120, the first life-bearing alien world is discovered. In 2200, the first wave of human expansion reaches its peak. Most habitable planets reach a year's travel time from Earth and have been successfully colonized by many small religious or ideological groups. The Terran nations, which are the people who expand from Earth, begin to forbid further explanation for fear of being unable to maintain control over the world of colonies in such distances. The Terran Mandate is organized by Earth superpowers in order to ensure that the Terran control of colonies continues. In 2240, metadimensional extraversion syndrome becomes becomes common, and it begins to manifest in certain fifth-generation spacers. Occurring most often during puberty, the abilities exhibited by MES victims seem flatly impossible by scientific measure, such as telepathy, teleportation, or precognitive flashes. So these are psychics. The emerge of psychics happened in 2240.
Heyo.
And they can't survive it. So anyone who gets psychic powers dies from it fairly young. But no worries. In 2315, the Psionic Authority perfects the first jump gate with the psychic powers, and they also solve all of the problems with maintaining your life as a psychic. So psychics are common. They are they're developing technology. They develop these gates that they can jump through so that they don't have to like fly through space all the time. The second wave of human colonization happens in 2330. This is when our spike drive ships that we've been traveling the universe with become nearly obsolete and unknown. Everyone's using these gates to teleport everywhere. And then in 2450, we have the Golden Age of Man. The Terran Mandate largely has given up on exerting control over the frontier colonies and now concentrates simply on neutralizing threats to the core worlds. Every description of human civilization and ideology can be found somewhere in the human space, and cultures experiment with new forms of social organization. Sci-tech supplements normal technology and produce enormous abundance for even the poorest of worlds that have access to core technology. So, like, at this point, everyone has psychic technology. No one's using old stuff anymore. And then in 2665, the scream happens. This is important to just playing Stars Without Number in general, as Lewis is just mouthing screams over there. So the scream knocks out everyone's ability to use psychic powers. Just straight up eliminates psychic powers from the universe. And this causes, in 2700, countless worlds just die as they are completely cut off from vital food, water, technical supplies. No psionic technology is able to be used anymore, which entire civilizations were based around. And a lot of the universe dies from this. In just 10 years later, in 2710, the last of the easily salvaged remnants of the Terran Mandate's pre-tech begin to wear up or become used up. So all technology at this point is completely gone, because anything that wasn't using psychic technology was already old, and it's wearing out now that they're trying to scavenge and use it. In 2900, there are attempts made to recover techniques of psychic training. The complete absence of any experienced psychic trainers hampers this effort. And the cost in psychic lives to recreate this training is enormous, because remember, everyone was dying originally when they got psychic powers, so that's starting over again with a much smaller population and less tech available. Eventually, a few worlds are successful in developing crude training programs, and most societies abandon trying to learn psychic abilities in effort of more immediate planetary needs, so rebuilding real tech that they can use. In 3150, stellar unions start to form around the strongest worlds. Exploration continues with the recreation of spike drives, and often this happens in the hands of small traders and scouting crews who are willing to risk it all for a chance to open a route to an unplundered tomb world. Warfare erupts between unions, contesting control over lost worlds and space installations, and that's when we zoom ahead another 50 years to 3200, which is the present day. So that is how the Stars Without Number world is set up. Okay, so now I'm going to talk a little bit about how we generated worlds. I've been doing this for the last like 2 years, trying to slowly set up this game. It was originally just going to be a one-shot, and then I'm like, no, this is going to be our new campaign when we're done with our D&D game. So pretty much Stars Without Number just has tons of tables where it's really easy random generation, and I rolled to see how big our grid was going to be, which it turned out to be a 19 by 19 grid for our star sector. So I rolled to see how many factions there were, and we had 7 factions. Then I rolled to see how many systems were in each of them. There are 4, 5, 8, 9, 12, 14, 18. There are 18 star systems in our sector. And then I rolled for each of those star systems to see how many planets surrounded them, which I won't go over that. There's a bunch of them. Most of them are between like 6 and 10. One other thing that we're doing with these factions is I adopted some rules from The Sprawl by Hamish Cameron. I got inspiration from one of their mechanics, which was they had doomsday clocks. And I thought that would be really fun for us to do, to decide, make it more player controlled as to how events happen. So each of these major factions is going to have a doomsday clock, and when they hit their doomsday, then it's almost like the campaign ends kind of a thing. It's going to be really hard for these factions to hit their doomsdays, but to make the doomsday clocks more prevalent, I also have 3 minor factions for every major faction. So there's a lot of minor factions. When they hit their doomsdays, which will be a lot easier, it's going to essentially be like boss battles or boss encounters. So it'll be like big peak moments in the story.
Are the clocks that we had in the prologue continuing in this campaign, or are they different?
The prologue campaign influenced some decisions that I made with starting this campaign, but they're not staying. All the clocks are reset because the clocks are very specific to the party.
Yeah.
So you guys aren't the same people anymore.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. And so, we don't have alignments, right, in these characters?
No, there's no such thing as alignments in Stars Without Number.
Refreshing.
Yeah, not to be like locked into, I need to act this way.
You can act really however you want. You don't have to worry about like what your character's thoughts might be.
Yeah, so it's pretty much you are pretending like you are the person in space.
I would like to set off everyone's doomsday clock.
Good.
You'll probably succeed.
All right, so now I'm going to tell you guys something tell the listeners and you something new. There's an 8th faction that is completely secret, and you guys will never know what's happening with them.
Well, I'm going to roll to know.
Well, you don't.
Look at that, 20.
Oh, I guess that's a thing to talk about to people who are unfamiliar with Stars Without Number, is a lot of the skills are rolled with 2d6, and there's not like... There are classes and backgrounds, but you're not restricted like you are in like Dungeons and Dragons. Like anyone can get any skill that they want,
which is fun.
Yeah, it's neat. It allows you to like really diversify your characters a bit.
Or everyone ends up exactly the same.
Yes.
With administrator. Everyone had administrator.
I didn't write that down on mine. I thought we did, though.
No, I think Jonathan let us re-roll it if we got it, because we all rolled administrator. Yeah,
but now no one has it, right?
No, I have it.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it was just going to be a game of clerks.
Listen, don't dig on the clerks of the world.
It's literally all I do. I'm a glorified clerk, so.
All right, so at this point, we're going to start talking about our player-generated world. So I made all of, like, the number of worlds and what worlds were controlled by what factions and all that kind of stuff, but I didn't make the details for all of the worlds. I only made the details for a few of the worlds. A lot of during this play, we're going to actually come up with the worlds together, which I think will be a lot of fun. So does anyone want to start? Because we had some people already make their worlds, and then we're going to make some worlds together, like, live right now. Does anyone want to start with their world that they've made?
I do.
Okay.
This is the world. I made a little picture. We can put
oh,
it on.
Oh, good lord.
Oh, pretty. Okay.
I thought, like, there was, like, a template that we needed to...
Bobby, you didn't make the image of your planet,
Mary
Bobby?
Mary just went above
not
and beyond.
As good as her.
I did this months ago, but I was really, really... into it. So my planet is N15-03-31 called Uruk-Strana, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yep.
And it's in the Niloyan Immaculate Regency. What are we calling that? Sector?
That's the faction.
Faction.
That's a part of.
Faction. So the terminology associated with this planet is prison planet and forbidden technology. Which is why I picked it, because it seems really cool. The prime species is Niloyans. And basically, what I envisioned for this planet is that it's really dark and dank.
Prison planet.
It's a dank planet.
Yeah, like a prison planet. But the prison itself is full of corruption. And the forbidden technology is typically made and sold on some kind of black market by the prisoners in the prison.
Like a typical prison.
While the wardens are getting some kind of cut, and the leadership in the prison is getting some kind of cut. And then the people outside the prison who aren't in prison but, like, work in the area or, like, live on the planet are kind of just, like, not like slaves, but, like, the people who rule the planet are the people in the prisons, whether they're the prisoners themselves or the prison wardens, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Just a little bit of background on the Niloyan Immaculate Regency is when I rolled for the factions, because I pretty much rolled for everything. It's all randomly generated with the exception of like some with the names that I made up. They're a eugenics cult. So they absolutely could be slave prisoners.
Yeah, so I guess... as far as character interaction with this planet, I kind of thought it could be a place where our characters or anyone else goes to get some of this forbidden technology, but they have to navigate through the corruption and the politics of the prison planet itself and the dangerous aspect of the terrain in the prison. Like, I'm thinking, like, deep, deep space wilderness type atmosphere on
yeah.
this planet, like dark and dirty and gross. I'm Good. Trying to think of a movie to compare it to, but I can't.
Cool. Yeah. Do you have any like specific enemies in mind? Because when Stars Without Number has a table that it gives you for like trying to generate some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And
so I picked a couple things.
Yeah. I was just.
I don't know if I
are.
Could do more than one. So for the forbidden tech side of the tag, there's a list of things. So I picked friend and thing.
Oh,
so,
you're supposed to pick something from all of them.
Oh, I yep. didn't know that.
That's fine. Each descriptor for your planet, each tag for your planet, comes with recommendations for deciding a friend, an enemy, a conflict, a technology, and a place. So those are the things that we're going to like pick little pieces of.
For the forbidden tech tag, I kind of want the enemy and friend to be the same person, and it would depend on how you interact with them. Is that something that we
yeah,
can
do? Yeah, that's cool. We can do that.
So it would be like the mad scientist type person that has this forbidden tech, the creator of the forbidden tech that we would want to either buy or steal or whatever.
Awesome.
And then conflict is going to be between that person, and I envisioned him to be a prisoner in the prison, him and his like... handler or warden in that prison particularly. Thing is the actual tech itself. Whatever it is that we need, I can make it up. We can come back to that. And then place is that deep, dark prison. And then prison planet is kind of just going to be the same. But I can put the enemy particularly as like the leader of the prison, like the most corrupt guy at the top, like knowing everything that's going on. And then friend could be just a very generalized person that we would run into, like a caretaker of the prison, or even someone outside the prison, or someone at like a port on the planet. And then the conflict for this tag is one of the ones that's written is like gangs have metamorphosed into the government, basically.
Cool. Who wants to go next with their planet?
Me.
Laura.
So my planet is in the sovereignty of the Quetzalana?
Quetzalonia.
Quetzalonia. It's numbered F150127. Prime species of Tiljari and Awenimo.
The Tiari.
Tiari. Yep, yep, totally. The planet's called Encunda. And it's technically a pleasure world and cheap life category. The main enemy is this woman named Carlia Moongold. She's an Awenimo. She's the leader of the Sun Petals, which is the biggest brothel in the city. She bribes the Council of Velusia, which is the capital, to do her bidding. She basically rules the planet in the shadow. Her secret is that her workers can change their genetics to look the most attractive to whoever's in the room. And this is a tech power. It's not psychic or anything. It's purely an illusion. Their real form is in their original body. This makes them very good assassins, but they're not very strong. And their friend is Raskar. He's a Ketling. He is a chaotic good scientist who discovered the healing drug power that the horrible brothel uses to keep people addicted. He basically will pay for any evidence against Carlia to use against the council. Should I do the ones? I have multiple friends and
you can do however much you want.
Okay.
And you could save some of it to be like secretive, or we can all talk about it now. Like, our characters won't know about this regardless, so.
Okay. There's another friend, Ariana Pino. She is an elite member of this group called the Silver Hands, which is Carlia's like main elite assassin team. And she wants to see Carlia die because she killed her family through this horrible drug addiction, but she's addicted herself, so it's kind of hard.
Whoa.
Oh. The main conflict is that these drugs that go around the planet can be used for miraculous healing properties, but instead they're just used for profit and addiction. Carlia keeps her secret tech a secret, and how they're powered, which is also another secret. Things. They have this really cool holiday called The Last Night, where every month this large festival is held in the central city of Velusia. It celebrates living life to the fullest, as death is around every corner or behind your back. Basically, a lot of debauchery. And then the next holiday is the First Morning. And this holiday is always directly after the last night. It's about physical care, emotional support, and healing. Many people travel to the less busy mountains to celebrate this in peace, and it can last up to a week. And then I have this section called drugs because it's a drug planet, and one of them is called Cog, which makes everything taste like chicken nuggets. And then there's this really secret drug called Heaven's Gift, and it's a healing flower on top of the mountains. The leaves have to be ingested in some form. Making tea from it is the easiest way. And then I have a bunch of places, but I'll only list off about two. There's the Angel Wings geysers. They're natural geysers in the northern hemisphere that spew hallucinogenic vapors. The vapors are harvested and refined into a powder that's sold. And then the Pits of Sheol. Dissenters are killed here by dumping them into the vents to hallucinate their worst fears and suffer until they eventually kill themselves. It's located under the crust of the entire planet. Not a lot of people know about it, but Carlia uses it quite often. Yeah, that's my planet.
Super depressing in some ways.
Yep, it's a cheap pleasure planet.
Yep. Does anyone want to go next? Do you have yours mostly done, Kylie?
Yeah, I'm just trying to come up with a city name really right now.
Okay.
What's the, do we have like the guidelines for how we're supposed to answer this?
Yes. Accessible? I'll get them to you when we get to yours. And
okay. Okay. Excellent.
I'm just trying to like look up. So like I looked up the world tag, right? Yep. Unbraked AI. And then it has a couple of different categories. E, F, C, T, P. What is that? Enemy, friend,
conflict,
is that what that is?
Tech,
conflict,
place.
Tech, and place.
Okay. Yeah. And then I can just either like rattle those off because that's part of the planet. Or I'd choose one of the two or both.
Yeah, you can pick some of those. You
or
can make up your own things.
Or yeah. Whatever. Like I kind of combined some of them. I can go next if you're still thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I came up with a city name.
Yeah, yours is pretty much done. So we'll make Luis's and Bobby's at the same, or we'll make one of theirs and then move on to the next after.
All right. So I had A110554, which is Pylokoshi.
Yep.
Okay. And that's in the star system A11, the Taro Beacon
Nucratic Federation.
Yeah, that one. That are Tarosians and Bikaku. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Alrighty then. And it has the tag is Psychic Academy. That's fun. Sorry, I have multiple windows open and I'm trying to get back to the right one. Okay, so the enemy on this planet is there's a hostile outer world that's been overrun by... the tags were Bubble City and Sealed Menace. I realize that might be important. So the enemy is, there's a hostile outer world overrun by huge worm-like creatures that only have little front legs for like digging that burrow underground in and around these like bubble cities. There's constant danger that the creatures could breach the bubble. So there's an elite barrier guard that keep the creatures out and like fight off any like potential breakthroughs or whatever. There's upper level government official who wants to allow the worms to breach the bubble, but only in like the slums, the poor neighborhoods, as a form of like population control, because the cities are quickly running out of resources to support the ever-growing population, and the outer world clearly is not safe because those creatures are more than most people can handle. But because he's a jerk, he wants to let those worms in to kind of kill off all the poor people. So he hates those that aren't of his class, especially outsiders, so immigrants are highly suspect. And the Bubble City guards, which are not the same as like the barrier guards, the barrier guards are like a step above like the inner city guards. So like if it were like a hierarchy, they'd be like the elite of the elite, whereas the city are like the beat cops kind of thing. And so the Bubble City guards are particularly hostile thanks to the influence of this official and his propaganda. I never made a name for him, so whatever.
That's fine.
So the friend I have is there's an elite barrier guard who I have a captain or something, someone who has some level of authority, who was adopted by an upper class couple, but originally came from like the lower class. But he was adopted because they couldn't have children, and he dislikes the oppressive regime inside the bubble and is kind of like trying to figure out how to fight back in a way. The conflict is there's a rising anti-government upper class sentiment in the significantly larger, poorer population. Sickness and overpopulation have been putting significant strain on the bubble city resources. There's a simmering resentment that's come to a head when this government official announces his new plan that one day a year the barrier to the outer city will be dropped in like certain places, like little entryways almost, to enable the worms to come in and like depopulate the city. Kind of think like the Purge a little bit. So our friend, this captain, and some other elite guards are devising a plan to stop him. The tech is that the what's his face, the city official, has the like codes to raise and drop the bubble in certain areas, and he, despite the fact that he's saying that it'll be equal and like evenly dispersed, he fully intends to only drop the bubble in the areas that'll affect the slums. And then place, I don't remember exactly what it has, but I have the like capital city as Lareth.
Okay.
I couldn't remember what place.
That's fine. Cool. So, is that everything?
Yep.
All right, so which one of you guys wants to make your planet first, Luis or Bobby?
I'll do it.
Bobby, what are the tags on your planet? Do you remember?
So I have a star system. It's G11. Star system G11. Is that correct?
Probably it's like probably G11 O something O something.
Yeah, I have G11 04-33.
Good.
The planet's name is Geratif.
Yep.
Geratif.
Yeah, Geratif.
Okay. It's a planet of cyber communists and hatred.
Oh, awesome. So I'll open up cyber communists first. Or do you want to start with cyber communist or hatred?
Cyber communist is a good place to start.
Those are your two tags.
I'm not surprised at all. That's what you picked.
Yeah.
That's fully what I expected from you, to be honest.
Cyber communist and hatred.
I'll read out what the cyber communist, I'll read everything that has to do with cyber communists, and then we can workshop what we want it to be.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so the cyber communist tag is, on this world, communism actually works. Thanks to pre-tech computing devices and greater or lesser amounts of psychic precognition, central planning nodes direct all production and employment on the world. Citizens in good standing have access to ample amounts of material goods for all needs and many wants. Instead of strife over wealth, conflicts are up over political control, cultural precepts, control over planning nodes. Many cyber communist worlds show a considerable bias towards private interests of those who run the planning nodes. So we have enemies are an embittered rebel against perceived unfairness, an off-world saboteur, or an aspiring Stalin figure. It actually says Stalin right there.
Wow.
I didn't read it.
Wow.
Yep. The friends are idealistic planning node technicians, cynical anti-corruption cops, or precognitive economists. The conflicts are pre-tech planning computers are breaking down. The planning only works because the locals have been mentally or physically altered, or the planning computers can't handle the increase in population within the system. The tech or thing are the planning node computers, the wildly destabilizing commodity that cannot be factored into plans, or a tremendous store of valuables made by an accident. And the places are humming factories, apartment blocks of perfectly equal flats, or mass demonstrations of unity. So you can make up your own things as well. Those are just what the book suggests that you go towards.
Oh, okay. Yep. Okay, cool.
So
cool.
You can completely ignore that if you want.
Oh, I'm going to ignore all of it.
Awesome.
I'm just going to sit up. Because my old back, it's not what it used to be. So old.
You should work out more.
I know. All right. So can we just actually start from the top and go down the list of you need? And
we
I can
need
get you to it.
We need enemies for your cyber communists.
Okay, enemies. So I like the idea of like unhappy people who want to try to like end the communist regime and change the planet.
Yep.
To become something that it's not currently.
So okay.
More capitalistic, more free market. Trying to overthrow the system. I think that would be a really, really good part of that.
Cool. That's a good enemy.
Yeah, yeah. And what's next?
Next are friends.
Friends to my character or friends to the planet?
Whichever you would like. I think in general, this is worded as like friend enemies of the PCs at friends of the PCs, like people who will aid or
it
also doesn't have to be that way, because depending on how you guys play, like the enemies, the antagonists might actually be the protagonist depending on how you guys play the game.
Yeah Well, I think that if you are on the side of communism, I think that the state military is going to be your friend.
Yep.
You know, I think the common man is going to be a friend too. So pretty much everything's your friend except for the insurrectionists that want to overthrow the government.
Okay, good. So it's kind of like everyone has each other's back against the people who are trying to deviate.
Communism isn't bad. Communism isn't bad. The people that want to overthrow the government, that they're bad. So that's kind of what happens on this world.
Perfect.
Because communism works on this world, so you can't say communism is bad.
The description does say, on this world, communism actually works.
And people aren't slaves. It's a good thing. You just can't own
stuff.
Yep.
Anyways.
All right, so now we have a conflict.
Okay. So with the rise in popularity of people trying to overthrow the government and on it, like maybe push out the old way of thinking of communism, there is creating a very large divide amongst the population, although that the resistance faction is smaller. It's on the smaller side. They're more terroristic. So they resort to guerrilla warfare and terroristic practices like bombing people. They will sabotage like the life support systems of the station, or
so your insurrectionists are very antagonistic. Like they're
bad.
Yeah,
they're real bad, and they make demonstrations because they're so few. They don't stand and fight like a conventional war. They go to really bad means to destroy people, like terrorism.
Awesome.
Yeah, very very nice.
All right, what do we got for a thing or technology that is like really important to this planet?
Well, the planet is rich with minerals. The mineral that's found on this planet has been altered, cannot be found anywhere else in the solar system. Because the planet itself, a long, long time ago, appears to have been hit with a weapon of some sort that completely melted and fused the crust of the planet. And honestly, it created and bonded new elements together to create this material, which is why it can't be found anywhere else. Don't know the name of this material.
That's fine. In world, we might not actually know the name of this material, because the way you're describing it sounds like what the game would call pre-tech, which is technology that existed before the Scream.
Yes,
that maybe we don't even know about anymore.
Yeah, it was a war that existed before the Scream, and there was a very, very large bomb that was detonated on the surface of the planet that completely just liquidated the planet. Turned it into like a star for a short period of time, and then it resettled and then came back down to where it is today. The atmosphere is not breathable. It is a dense argon atmosphere, so very, very inert. So there's no fire. There's no nothing.
Yep.
It's hot. It's very hot. It ranges between 115 degrees to 135 Fahrenheit, depending on the, sunlight or shadow. So, although if you went without a spacesuit, you wouldn't instantaneously die, but your skin would probably receive first-degree burns within a few minutes of exposure. But you cannot breathe the atmosphere, so it's dense too. It's probably a third more dense than Earth's atmosphere, about the same gravity too. So one g of acceleration on the surface.
For the atmosphere, are all of the people who live on this planet, are they always in vac suits? Like, if they need to, like, leave their houses, or do they have like bubbles, like safe zones?
So the cities and everything on it, they have to be enclosed in domes or habitable structures.
Cool.
Leaving, all you are required to have is an oxygen mask, because the atmosphere doesn't kill you. It burns. So you have to cover your skin with maybe cloth or something to keep the heat off of your skin. And again, 115 degrees is not going to kill you. It's just
going to suck.
Really, really flipping hot. Really flipping hot. Skin cells begin to die at around 113 degrees Fahrenheit. That's where you start getting like first degree burns, like sunburns and irritation to the skin. So the heat will actually do that to your skin there.
That's when Australia melts too, right?
yeah seriously. So what else?
Cool. I guess the last thing is a place.
Thinking communism, huh?
An important place to your communists. And then remember, we also have hatred, which we might not add anything more, but we might want to add more.
You can add more, that's fine. Well, for talking communism's red. The name of the main city is called Crimsonia. Yeah.
Cool. Crimsonia.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay, let's find hatred.
Yeah. Hatred.
Hatred.
It's fun.
change.
They hate the free market.
They hate it. Hate it.
That's just going to be all your answers. The enemy, not the free market. The friend.
I'm sorry.
For
hatred?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right, here we go. Hatred. For whatever reason, this world's populace has a burning hatred for the inhabitants of a neighboring system. Perhaps the world was colonized by exiles, or there was a recent interstellar war, or the ideas of racial or religious superiority have fanned the hatred. Regardless of the cause, the locals view their neighbor and any sympathizers with loathing. For enemies, they have, for examples, a native that has convinced off-worlders that they are agents of them, a cynical politician in need of The enemies are a native that has convinced off-worlders that they are agents of them, like capital T them, or a cynical politician in need of scapegoats. Friends are intelligence agents needing cat's paws. I don't know what a cat's paw is.
It's a communist thing.
It means like sort of like an informant or like a fall guy.
Okay, cool.
People to do their dirty work for them.
So intelligence agents that need fall guys, a holodoc producer needing an inside look. That sounds like that might be like a like a Hollywood thing. And then unlucky off-worlders from the hated system. The conflict are characters are wearing or using items from a hated world. So like people will hate your players immediately if they have one of these items on them.
Yeah.
The characters are known to have done business there, or the characters look like the hated others. The thing or technology is proof of their, capital T their, evil doing. Reward for turning in enemy agents, a relic stolen by them years ago. And the place is a war crimes museum, an atrocity site, captured or decommissioned spaceship left as a trophy.
Interesting. Okay. So because this planet possesses a very, very rare metallic element that has not yet been processed in large quantities. So for the most part, like, to the general public, it's pretty unknown, but like the higher ups of governments know about it, and it's incredibly powerful. It's incredibly strong. The surrounding systems of this world do not share the they do not bask in the glories of communism as this planet does. So in fact, they're quite free market, and because they do not see eye to eye economically. They want this material from the surface of this world. So they will go in and create puppet governments on this planet to overthrow the global government, if you will, so that they can get their hands on the material. Very, very rare, very, very expensive. Very expensive to have. So that, I would say that would be the enemy. That would be the hatred. So they cause a lot of issues. They cause a lot of issues, a lot of innocent people die because they incite violence and they start up resistance groups and terrorist activity. So yeah.
Anything else from hatred that you want to add on, or are you pretty well developed?
Pretty well developed.
Pretty well endowed on your planet.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's good, right? I think
yeah,
I think that's solid, funny. Right?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Hey, Luis, what are your tags? And did you already look at them?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Unbraked AI and Cyclical Doom.
Which is super cool. I when I rolled for all of them, I was so happy that those two got combined.
Yeah.
It sounds so cool.
So, well, from what I was reading on the little, like, blurb, because I was just looking at what's on Discord, which isn't, like, the full thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was basically, you know, Unbraked AI is the government owns some sort of AI that, like, makes the whole government work. Like, people just kind of work with the supercomputer, and it's not like people control it. It controls whatever's happening within the government. But then Cyclical Doom was, you know, exactly what the name is. Like, every 100,000 years or something, everything dies. But everybody retains, like, a little bit of the culture beforehand, so that's how everybody knows. It's like the Mayan calendar. Like, you know, every time they make a new one, they know that everything ends, pretty much.
Yeah.
For Unbraked AI, though, it was saying that it's like, it kind of went hand in hand because it sort of mentioned that like the apocalypse is controlled by the people in the government. So the AI that controls the government is just making the apocalypse happen every time. But I don't know like what else. I didn't have like the categories though, so I'm not too sure.
I can pull those up.
Yeah.
I'll bring these up just so that it gives everyone like ideas and like everyone else can like speak up too if they have like a really good idea for something.
Or if we don't agree with Lewis's planet.
No, he gets final say.
There's only a free market on everyone's planet.
On everyone.
Unbraked, like unbraked.
Unbraked. Like the AI, there's no limits.
Wouldn't it be unbroken?
Unbraked.
It says unbraked in this Mary.
I'm just confused. Because
there's no stop.
It's like, sci-fi, it right. Mary. You can make up words.
I know.
Metamorphoses.
Listen, it's what it said.
Okay, exactly.
Whatever.
All right, unbraked AI. So the categories for enemy is an AI cultist, a Maltech researcher. So Maltech, it didn't come up in the recap that I did.
Malware?
But no, it's not. It's not malware. It's technology that's been banned.
Oh.
So like...
like the forbidden tech on my planet would be Maltech.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is stuff like genetic engineering is for the most part banned depending on how you're doing it. Well, but yeah, anything that you would think that the sector as a whole would say that's not legal is Maltech. So there's a Maltech researcher as an enemy, a government official dependent on the AI. For friends, we have a perimeter agent. I don't know what that means. We can look it up at some point. An AI researcher or a braked AI that is actually supposed to like help the characters.
No. Okay, so then I was misreading. I thought it was all like one thing.
No, it can yeah. be.
I thought like all of them were one, but I like the government AI though.
Yeah, yeah, we can definitely keep that.
Yeah.
Conflicts, we have AI's presence is unknown to the locals, so even though they're like totally ingrained in this, like the local people don't know that they're being puppeted by this AI.
Mm-hmm. Yep, check.
Yep, check, definitely. The locals depend on the AI for some vital service. The AI appears to be harmless. The AI has fixated on the group's computer or the group's ship, so like our ship, the AI is like, I need that.
Mm-hmm.
Or the AI wants transport off-world, so they're trying to expand to other worlds.
Are we visiting the planets, or no? These are just our backstories.
No, these aren't backstories. So these are planets that you guys have the possibility of visiting during the course of the game.
Okay, so definitely government AI. Definitely, it's... what was the first one? It's unknown to the...
people? Yeah, unknown to the people. So like there's a group of beings on this planet who have no idea that they're being puppeted by the AI.
Mm. Let me see where so like I would want it to be like half and half where it's like, okay, yeah, you like, because the third one I think was whatever, the AI, like people know about it and it helps them.
Yep.
But like, I feel like there should be a darker side. So like, yes, people know that the AI is there, but they don't know like how deep it really goes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
I like that.
I do like that it also is trying to control our ship. So definitely, that's
we can kind of just take all these.
Yeah, pretty yeah. much.
The tech for it would be that there is a core for the AI, like just a giant room that controls all of them, almost mm-hmm. like a hive mind type thing.
Yeah.
Maltech research files, so stuff that we'd be able to acquire that's like Maltech. Perfectly tabulated blackmail on the government officials, so that's like how the AI are controlling the government.
Mm-hmm.
Or pre-tech computer circuitry. Any of those sound nice? Or you want to make up your own thing?
I like pre-tech.
Okay.
So like, I'm assuming then what, it's just like some ruins on the planet from before the AI...
before
set off
the
apocalypse, yeah.
Yeah.
And whatever. And we're just going to find it and be like, sick.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then the last thing is a place. So a municipal computer bank, a cult compound, a repair center, or an ancient hard copy library.
Yep, there it is. A hard copy library with a pre-tech.
Hard copy library.
Yep.
Awesome. And then the other one was cyclical doom.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So that, I think it was, yeah. I want my government AI to... already like pre-programmed basically when the apocalypse happens.
Awesome.
So that's already, that's like, that's what it is. Like the
what
enemy.
Kind of apocalypse is it? Like nuclear or
yeah,
like a giant tsunami? Like what happens? Hmm.
You can get very creative with how your world ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to go with is...
could be different every time.
Yeah, the AI is going to have like a Garden of Eden type of a situation where it's like, okay, every whatever, like 1,000 years, it's going to take 20 people and put them in like this like underwater lab and then just, yeah, nuclear... No, I mean, maybe not nuclear because you couldn't like rebuild right after, but like wipe out all of, you know, it's going to be like an ascension type of thing. And so then all those people are just going to like be in the sea lab 20,000 leagues under the sea.
Cool. And I mean, like if we get to the, if slash when we get to this planet, we can decide how the AI kills everyone. Like that, that
or
can
how
be
far away
fun.
We are from the apocalypse.
Right.
Yeah. Because I would like that. I think that's a good apocalypse scenario. Like it's gonna take 20 people and then kill everybody else, but it's not gonna be like a slaughtering, like everyone's gonna be like, yep, drink the Kool-Aid because this is what like we're supposed to do to ascend and peacefully, but the AI is just like manipulating everybody and killing everybody.
Yeah, they're not actually ascending anywhere, it's just they're controlling the population and starting over again.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. I like that. I don't think we actually have to go through these because I think that's pretty well fleshed out unless yeah. you want to read some of these.
No, I think that was like the cyclical doom is like pretty on
pretty
the nose. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're not like my character is not from this planet, right?
No.
Or are they? Yeah. Okay. We just,
I mean, if so the prequel, the, I'm not sure if everyone's heard it at this point by the time we publish it again, but something that happened in the prequel was at the end of like this very catastrophic battle, there were children that got abducted to a certain planet.
Of the Corn.
Children of the Corn. so there were children that got abducted to a planet. So if you, all of our characters are going to be children who were abducted there at the end of our prequel battle. So if you wanted your character to be from that planet, that's fine.
Yeah, because
it wouldn't be common, like you're playing a Tihari, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be common for a Tihari to be from that area.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're on this, that section is on the south end of the sector and the Tihari are from the north.
Yeah.
So you would have stood out if you were a Tihari in that planet, but it, I wouldn't say it's impossible.
Mm. Okay. Nah, I don't have to be from there.
Could be from my planet.
Yeah. Mm. I'm from there.
Cool. So that's all the planets that we're going to talk about.
Hooray.
Today. I have some that are made, and then there's a bunch of them that are still empty. Like, they have world tags, but we haven't really fleshed them out yet. That's going to happen, like, as we play. All right, so now I'll talk about the playable races or species. So you heard us talk about them kind of intermittently throughout the whole thing, but we'll go through them just as... Yeah, so anyways, Stars Without Number is intended to be a human-only game, but that didn't seem like too much fun, so we decided to make a bunch of different alien species. So one thing to note is that the Stars Without Number does have a transhuman campaign, but I didn't really want to give any of these species like a huge leg up on something else, or me have to like try and balance their mechanics. So mechanically, no species is different than another. Flavor-wise, the species have tons of differences. So it's a lot about how these guys want to end up playing their characters or how I play the NPCs and stuff like that. So the rule of thumb that I'm going with is that all of these species evolved in a way that makes them kind of equally suited for survival. Not so like mechanically they're the same, but however they got there, however we want to make the flavor. And if we do have something of flavor that does give someone a mechanical advantage, we all kind of have to agree that that really is what we want to happen with the story. I don't think it'll happen much, but just in case. So I also want to clarify that I did assign real-world ethnicities / nationalities to these species as I was creating them to help me get a sense of the flavor I wanted for their society, places, traditions, names, etc. It's not indicative of every individual that is of that species, just a guideline, just to help me create these worlds and characters. If any listeners have suggestions on a culture that they're part of, that they want to be part of the campaign, or if they're part of that nationality or ethnicity, let us know. Send us an email. And like, if you have like traditions that you kind of want to see morph into our game, like, heck yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. Give us your culture.
Inclusion.
Give us your culture.
I like how one of us says inclusion, one of us says appropriation. All right, so one quick reference. One quick reference before I dive into this. When you're picturing what I'm reading, all of these species are
dongs.
Bipedal and have huge dongs. And
what?
I think we should explain what bipedal means.
They walk on two legs.
Thank you.
Yes.
For your benefit, Mary.
No.
Lies. So they are bipedal. They're generally human shaped. Like, they generally have a human silhouette. None of these things are like bestial, just like purely bestial. They're all very human silhouetted.
Humanoid.
They're all humanoid.
That.
Yeah. So I'm going to start reading them off in order from them being most human to least human. I've got three groups of three. So there's three very close to humans, three kind of human looking, and then there's three very alien species. So first up, we've got the Owenimo. They're almost indistinguishable from humans, and as far as historians know, they did not originate from Earth or the Terran Mandate. I wanted the Owenimo people to have a West/Central African vibe, and they are one of two major factions, or two major species, in the Sovereignties of Quetzalonia faction. Next up, we have the Mahalians. They are near humans that relied on minor cybernetic body augmentation to adapt and overcome in space. I was going for a Middle Eastern vibe with this species. They are the primary species of the Tawhide League, and Mary and Bobby are playing Mahalians.
Ooh.
Yep.
Buddies.
Yep.
You're a boy, right?
I'm a boy.
Okay.
I'm a man.
They gon' fuck.
Are we children in this game?
So you guys are anywhere from 16 to 20. That's the age range that
I
brought
up. Like, sort of.
So we gonna fuck.
So totally fuckable.
So could.
No!
So almost legal.
Well,
in,
depends
in many places
on,
around the world, 14 is a legal age, so.
This is a gray area.
Here, not legal, but tread in lightly. Somewhere like Japan, legal.
We're also in space, so.
Yeah, that's true.
What here about the space police?
Yeah.
We can make, yeah. What are the space rules here? Where they not pay attention?
That's why a lot of anime is, like, young.
Yeah, I don't like that culture.
So, the last of the near humans are the Ketling.
I did not realize I was that close to human.
So these people have modified themselves with animal DNA and bioengineering rather than cybernetics like the Mahalians did. Their minor augments have become part of their genes and now manifest with a different level of severity based on their dominant recessive genes. So this could range from anyone just having cat-like features, like they're completely human, but like they have cat-like features, to someone that is nearly entirely a cat. So you can have any kind of variation between that. The mammalian DNA is the only type of DNA that was able to bond with humans, so Ketlings are only mammals. Like, you won't see lizard or bird people or anything like that.
Or it's crab people?
Or crab
Stop it! People. I hate that.
I don't know what this is in reference to.
It's a South Park reference, and Mary hates
crab
it.
Crab people.
Might be crab, might be people.
Tastes like crab, walk like people.
Please stop. Makes me so uncomfortable.
Ketlings are not crab people.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Glad we cleared that up.
Explicitly, they are only mammals.
Such a good song.
So the Ketlings are based on Scandinavian culture, and they are the primary species of the Principality of Vatir. Kylie is playing a Ketling.
Woo!
Do you have a beaver tail?
No.
They're mammals. They could be a platypus.
But I don't want to be.
What are you?
Cat.
We'll get there.
Oh, Kylie, I didn't know you were a furry.
No, I just have a deep and abiding love for cats in my heart, and this is as close as I can get to having a cat.
And is a furry.
Oh.
All right, so our next group of species are our human-similar species. The first ones we're going to go over are the Tahari. They look like their species evolved as amphibians. The vibe I was going for was that they were going to be from, like, Spanish regions. They are the second major species of the Sovereignties of Quetzalonia, and Luis is playing a Tahari.
Yes.
Good.
Fish person.
I am.
Next are the Taurosian. They're a species that evolved from avian creatures and avian life. I wanted them to have a northern Mediterranean feel, like Greek, Rome, stuff like that.
Gonna be playing one of them?
Nope, no one's playing one of them. And they are one of two species from the Taro Beacon Nucratic Federation.
Taro Beacon?
Yes.
Because they're birds.
Bird people?
No, because of the Bikaku.
What's that?
Ooh.
Louise thinks bukake every time I say that.
I mean, it sounds like it.
I don't know what that means, so...
Don't. No.
Shall I explain?
No, please don't. Not on the podcast.
This is 18 plus.
I don't want to know.
Yes, it is. We marked this as explicit.
Oh, nice. Thank God.
So we'll actually get to the Bikaku now. They're the last of the... I'm going to need to change their name because of you.
Keep going. Don't stop.
Do continue.
Read it slower, please.
Lastly...
Oh, God, please don't.
...are the Bikaku.
I quit the podcast.
You're still in the marriage, so...
So there are species that are insectoid. I base them on Eastern Asian culture, specifically going for, like, feudal Japan, and they are the second of the two species in the Taro Beacon Nucratic Federation. So the Taro is for the Tarosians, the Beacons for the Bikaku. Our last category are the straight-up aliens. The most human of our aliens are the Naloyan. They're a silicate-based life form that looks very polished. They have six eyes aligned like the six dots on a die, a slitted nose, and a turtle-like mouth on a very human-looking head. They are based on Slavic countries, and they are the only species in the Naloyan Immaculate Regency. Because they're a eugenics cult. The Wyrsine are beings that are created almost digitally and have physical forms that extend from a technology plate that rests where the pectorals of a human would be. They are supposed to have a British feel, but as you will all find out, if I ever try to do a British accent, it will always devolve to bad Australian. So,
true.
So the Wyrsine are the primary species of the Estolian technocracy. And last but not least are the Sudeg, the most alien in a sense, because I didn't actually assign a culture to them. I didn't want them to relate to humanity at all. They visually look like a mashup of plants and birds, and they are the primary species. Nope, they are now the only species in the Chivrak Warlords faction. Laura is playing a Sudeg.
I think their species took over the Indian sector now.
Yeah, they destroyed the Kalima before we started recording this. The Kalima were another species that were supposed to share the Chivrak Warlords, but no one picked them, and they were never part of the prequel, and I really liked the idea of having three groups of three, and they were going to throw that off, so they got nixed.
Womp. Rough, dude.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to the party, so we can go around in a circle and everyone talk about their characters.
Party?
Yeah, party.
Party.
Party. Who wants to go first? If you guys don't pick who wants to read first, I'm just going to roll and find out.
Yeah.
Do that. Just roll. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
This is like a fun game.
Make it as random as possible.
Bobby gets to go first.
So random.
It was random. I rolled and then I assigned the number to the number Mike.
Wow. So what do you want to know? Like, just like everything about my character?
Yeah, just tell us about John Cole.
John,
tell us your life story.
Cole.
Is that his middle name?
Fucking yeah. John fucking Cole. Okay, so John Cole.
I'm just going to hear Junkle every once in a while.
Junkle. Junkle. I forget the name of my planet.
Were we supposed to pick what planet we came from? Because I did not.
So you can if you want.
Yeah, so he's from Guratif. Guratif. But when he was 14, he was transported to the...
So he would have been pulled from Guratif when he was... it's been 10 years since you guys got abducted to the island. So depending on your age now, you can be 16 to 20. What age is that?
I'm sorry.
Are you 16, 17, 18, 19, or 20?
I'm 20.
You're 20 currently?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were 10 when you were abducted.
All right, so he was 10 years old when he was abducted from Guratif. On Guratif,
It is mandatory that you go into the military. Okay, so at a young age, they taught him how to shoot, how to be a really good soldier, essentially. So military school, that's where he was at. And then he was taken and then brought to that that new world with all the doors and stuff.
Yes, the one that all the children were on, and we will get to that soon.
Yes.
So if you have anything that you want to say about your time on the island, we're going to do that after everyone introduces.
Yeah, I'm not going to go. Yeah, we wouldn't go any more past that. But he's pretty soft spoken. He's a really, really good soldier. He does what he's told by the right command. And he's a really good shot. Like a really, really, really good shot.
Yeah, when we were making Bobby's character,
he is a very, very dangerous person when it comes to combat.
Yeah.
That's
Bobby
all
rolled
I'll
fairly
say.
Well and put all of his effort into shooting. So
don't fuck with John.
All right, I'm going to roll and see who goes next.
Cole fucks with John.
And we keep going.
It ain't going to stop.
Okay, well, that's convenient. Next is Mary.
So my name is Nadia Kadir. Because I'm Mahalian, so I kind of wanted to make it be, you know, more Middle Eastern sounding. I am a technician, kind of with an engineering goal in mind, and I'm an expert, level one. So before we got abducted, my character has the tinker focus. So she, what I expect in this planet, which I chose the background planet. She's from the Tawhide League. So star system G11, K12, M8, or S9. And I wanted to ask you, John, what exactly does friendly foes mean?
What's the name of that planet?
Duhat.
Duhat.
This planet, Duhat, is the second planet from that star system's sun. So just I wanted to bring up what all these numbers are we're saying. When I generated this, I put it on a 19 by 19 grid because that's what I rolled for. And basically it's set up like a battleship thing. So G is on the columns and the numbers are on... the numbers are columns, the rows are letters. So G11 is the physical space that it's on our grid. And then the O2 means that it's the second planet from that system star. And then the last number was a random number that was associated with the tags, which is what you were just asking about. So what was it?
Friendly foes.
Friendly foes. So I'm just going to read the description, not all the tags that go along with it. Some hostile or malevolent cabal has a branch or sect in this world that is actually quite friendly towards outsiders. For whatever internal reason, they are willing to negotiate and deal honestly with strangers and appear to lack the worst impulses of their fellows. So they're from a very bad, we'll say, minor faction. There's a minor faction that is incredibly bad or violent or something like that, but they treat people on that planet very well.
So I'll be I'm from that planet then.
Yep.
And basically, my dad was one of the former warriors of the second tag of that planet. And him and I used to do like a lot of techie stuff together. So that kind of sparked my interest and eventually like very high skill in tech and tinkering and engineering and that kind of background.
Cool.
And we were scooped up.
How old is your character present day?
You said between 16 and 20?
Yep.
18.
18? So they were 8 years old when they got abducted.
Yeah.
Kylie.
Okay. My character is Astrid Folstad. She's about 17. I have her being from Ket, which I think is the first planet in the Ketling system. She's a Ketling.
Yep. Ket is the home planet of the Principality of Veter.
Yeah, and the tags for it were rigid culture and nomads.
Yep.
So the reason I said she's about 17 is because I'm envisioning that, like, maybe our particular like nomadic clan or like whatever don't celebrate birthdays in like a traditional kind of sense. Like you hit landmarks based off of like your growth and development. So like in our term, she'd be about 17, like almost an adult kind of thing. But in her cultural term, she would recognize herself as like nearly adult, but not an age particularly. Like everyone hits it at a different kind of point.
She's on the edge of 17.
Sure.
Just like a white winged dove.
She's 16 going on 17.
Cool.
I guess I was thinking kind of, because Ketlings are like animal kind of.
Yeah. How much into the animal are you? Like percentage human to animal?
I'm thinking like probably like 30% kind of. So like she has some like fuzzy ears and like a fluffy tail, but like not super feline like facial features and like that kind of thing.
So she's not like a cat's cat?
Right. No, yeah. Not a cat's cat.
No, like bird description, yeah.
Like, right, yeah. Like... So like not cat from movie Cat.
Yeah, more like anime cat girl.
Yeah, probably that's yep. closer. I'm honestly kind of thinking, what's her name in Shield Hero?
Reptalia.
Oh, yeah, okay. A little yeah. sort of Reptalia-esque.
What
yeah.
animal are you mixed with? Cat?
Cat. Okay. Oh, like Snow Leopard.
Snow Leopard. Okay. Yeah.
You gonna be Red Panda?
Oh, just kidding. Red Panda.
I was gonna say, you could do that.
Yes, Red Panda. Okay.
So you look like Red Panda?
I look like a humanoid red panda.
She's got red panda ears and a red panda tail.
Yep, the big aww. Floofy tail and like auburny reddish hair. Yeah. Yep.
Fun.
Doing that.
I forgot to say that my character, because I'm a Hollyan, has the cybernetic type visual. And I know that it doesn't at this time have any like perks or anything, but the plan is to make it upgraded in the future. So I want her to have one eye that's cybernetic and one arm.
Cool.
That's cybernetic for now.
Yeah, we can do that.
Cool. Fun.
So cool.
Same. Yeah, it has to be the same thing with me because that's...
No, it can be any kind of cybernetic. So the Mahalians have like... They were more human-like and they had to adapt by implanting stuff into them. But at this point, they've just evolved to like literally be born with like some cybernetic components.
Yeah. I figured as much.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be an arm and an eye like mine. It can be different.
Yep.
Okay.
What do you want?
So you can think about that.
I like the concept of having like an eye that's cybernetic because then you can have like infrared vision.
Yeah, if you upgrade it. That's what I want too. Yeah. Plus I want to be able to have like a gun on my arm at all times.
That's so Jesus. There is nothing that like makes something more intimidating than having someone that can see in the dark. Like that is so, yeah, I need that.
Okay, so John right. Cole also has a cyber eye.
Yeah. All right, cool.
I have cyber brown.
Okay, so my...
You're...
What did he say?
I'm going to stab you.
He said he has a cyber brown eye.
Cyber brown eye?
My butthole is cybernetic.
God. I hate you so much.
It can see in the dark. Cyber sphincter.
All right.
Continue.
Nope,
opens,
I don't want to talk
opening
anymore.
Closes like a camera.
Takes
please
pictures.
Stop it.
No
please
one
stop
needs
it.
To know anything else about my
there's
character.
There's too many
visuals.
No. Okay. I want to know more about your character.
No. It's all over.
Did you ever say your character's name yet?
Yes, I did.
Yes. Okay. Astrid.
Yep.
Anything else you want to say about your character?
Not anymore.
No. Say more about your character.
I
want to
know about your character.
So I picked the background physician. So I'm... visualizing because they're like nomadic people that probably there was a heavy emphasis on like I'm gonna say herbology but I don't know if that's right so like healing but like in not in a like doctory kind of sense, more in a holistic sense, but since coming here like with all of the different people and stuff, she's moved definitely farther from like the herbal healing into the more like scientific approach, just because there are so many. She'd never seen anyone other than a Ketling before, so now she's like, oh wow, look at all of these things, and like the idea of mixing like technology and biology has like really triggered her like interest in seeing what else could be done with like healing and that kind of thing. So my envisionment is that like, my character will be the person to do all of your, like, biogenetic upgrade kind of things, because I picked the biopsionic tract or whatever you want to call it. Oh, yeah, and I'm a psychic. I forgot.
Yes.
I'm a psychic.
Yeah. I'm psychic. Hey, it's fine.
I'm psychic. It's fine. I think I'm the only psychic, right?
Yeah, you're the only one with metadimensional extroversion syndrome. What? That's what they called it in the history of Stars Without Number, metadimensional extroversion syndrome.
Extra virgin syndrome?
Extra virgin.
I was like, wait.
As an extra virgin.
Not virgin.
I was extra virgin, you nerd. You're extra virgin olive oil.
Oh, boy. So that's kind of what I'm thinking, is that, like, I got really into, like, the like, kind of, like, techie biology, like, research kind of thing.
I bet our characters are going to be friends.
Last but not least.
Hopefully no one's allergic to cats.
Nope. We got two more.
Are you a panda now?
True.
No. You said, are you a panda now? Red pandas aren't pandas, right?
Well.
They are related to pandas.
They're related,
oh,
but.
I thought they were.
They're actually more closely related to raccoons. But.
So you're pretty much red Raftalia.
I'm a trash panda.
you're red hair Raftalia. instead
Wait,
of...
but she does have red hair, doesn't she?
No, she's brown.
No, oh. She's reddish hair.
Yeah, it's reddishy brown.
Meh.
I thought she was like a fox, but...
No, she's a raccoon.
She's a raccoon.
Oh. Definitely thought she was a fox. Because, like, raccoons are gray.
Not everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. All right. Fair enough.
So we got Laura next.
So, her name is Kamala Magar. She is a Sude, the aliens that are, like, plant and bird-like. Her class is expert, and her background is criminal. Oh, her nickname is the Lotus.
Nice.
Yeah. Plants. So her body is mostly dark mahogany bark, and then her upper torso is more dark green skin, and then she has red and green feathers protruding from her lower arms and her head. And her hands and feet are more like talons. They're like four talons. She is originally from, where is it? Oh, here we go. A30451 Kebez. It's a shackled world and robots world. So I envisioned that she would have a very small family because they're a minor race. They're very exotic. And that her parents and some siblings would, like, go out and find robots and then start taking them apart to sell for parts to afford food and housing. In a shackled world, I just assumed would be, like, cut off from everything else. I don't know if that's what it means exactly.
We can look it up. And we can also make it mean that if we really want it to be.
Like, very cut off. So, like Kylie's character, she's very curious about other people. She would be 16. She'd be pretty young when we start.
Yep. So she was 6 years old when she got abducted.
She's a hacker. She's skilled at robots, and she's so curious. She wants to figure out how things work. Also an assassin.
Just so you know.
So she likes talking to people.
And killing them.
Yeah, like, she will be friendly, and she'll trust you, and she'll barter with you, but she can be very ruthless because in her world, that was just how it was. It's not personal. That's just how I envision her.
Cool. I found Shackled World, and it is cut off, like you were saying, but it's specifically cut off by something. There's someone suppressing the world for people entering and exiting.
Interesting.
Yep. So we can make that whatever we want it to be when we come across it.
Hell yeah.
That pretty much it. Cool. Lastly, we got Louise.
Cool. All right. One thing, though. The cybernetic, like, bio stuff. So, like, what? If in campaign, like, can I lose a leg and you can, like, build the leg for me? Can we, like, do that? Or is that, like...
She has a list of skills.
Yeah. And currently, my only skill is psychic training.
Oh. That's because, like, with
so
my...
So, maybe at, like, a higher level.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
But...
You're very concerned with my one hit point, so I'm like,
all right. Well, I only have three, so...
Yeah. Yeah,
I've got two.
Yeah, so kind of a update for people who are used to, like, D&D systems. This is very lethal. Stars Without Number, like, we for the prologue, we played, or prequel, we played, what is it? We played max level characters, level 10 characters, and the person who had the highest hit points was like 50, and like max level characters in D&D have multiple hundreds. So, and like the damage that you do in this game isn't all that different from D&D. So like,
yeah, like one shot, you're dead.
Yeah, combat is lethal. It starts you off very weak, very human.
One hit point.
Yeah.
A nice stabbing might do you in.
Yep. As long as you guys are on a world that has like technology, like a, they have tech level specifications for worlds. I haven't assigned them to our planets yet, but like tech level 3 is like modern to us. So like real world modern. Mm-hmm. Tech level 4 is like pretty futuristic. And tech level 5 is like people who have been able to regain the pre-scream tech.
Yeah.
Immortality. So,
yeah, stuff like that. Like really, really technological, like warp gates and stuff is tech level 5.
Someone found the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah. So most of the worlds that we're going to be interacting with are like tech level 4. And tech level 4 worlds would be able to give you like cybernetics and stuff. Like if you're about to die, like maybe they rip out an organ and replace it with something cyber. But that will, the way Stars Without Number works is stuff like that can give you permanent strain. So if you are saved by means like that, that can only happen so many times before your body physically can't handle that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or yep. You turn into like a machine.
No, you'd just die. You wouldn't be able to survive the surgery.
Yeah.
Is there any way to increase your strain?
Yeah, so your strain is always...
Well, I wasn't done yet. Without increasing constitution.
I think as you level up, your strain may increase at times, but for the most part, it's related to your constitution. And there might be foci that increase your ability to retain strain.
Okay. Well,
so it'll be something to like look out for when we're leveling up and stuff.
Yeah, I was just curious. I didn't know like how that was whole thing was working. All right, so I play Mohan Wayu. So I'm a Tijari. Is it Tijari?
Tihari. Yeah.
I'm from Pleasure Planet.
Ooh.
So I'm gonna say I'm 20 because that would mean I got abducted when I was 10.
Called Pleasure Planet.
No, it's called the Encantar or something.
Encunda.
Like that.
Encunda. But everybody knows it as Pleasure Planet.
Yep.
Okay.
And cheap life.
Pee pee.
Oh boy.
I am from the southern part of Pee Pee. So what? It's just a little like background, right?
Yeah, whatever you want to talk about your character.
Yeah, so I'm gonna say that when I was like 5 or 6, I got sold into a brothel, and I was like one of those tea serving boys, but not the kind. Never mind, I'm not gonna explain that.
Not the good kind.
Not the bad
kind.
Yeah. So, but all of my skills are like authority and henchkeeper, stuff like that. So, I have a ton of charisma. That's like my main skill. So I want to say that like being on Pleasure Planet helped me to like kind of be more of like a con man, because my background is entertainer. So I should be like a fast talking, you know, do whatever kind of a dude. But I only have
you're
one
like
hit
a
point.
Bard.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That was like what my character was going for, but because this isn't D&D and there's no like bard class.
Kind of D&D though.
Well, it's a very different like in terms of like classes and stuff like that, and like how you apply your skills, because you can get any skill. So like however you want to build your character is like this. Yeah, so I'm like, all right, I'm mostly a talker. So I'm probably not going to do too much combat, but I'll smooth talk my way out of situations.
Yeah,
you're Yaskier from The Witcher.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
yeah. So, combat is lethal in Stars Without Number.
Yeah.
We're just gonna say that combat is lethal. In like D&D, you guys play more like heroes at all times. It's not gonna be like this. Like we might reroll characters in this game.
No.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, didn't want to focus too much on like shooting and stuff.
How is it gonna happen? Like. Let's say, for example, in this first game that we play, my character gets shot and I have 2 hit points and
you're
they do
dead.
2 damage and I 0 and I die and I have 0 system strain.
We will tackle that if it happens.
Wah.
Yep.
Can you just tell me that I'll never lose my character?
No, I cannot tell you that.
Okay.
I could absolutely tell you that for D&D that like you guys would only die if we decided that it was like really character and plot relevant that one of your characters died. Stars Without Numbers, meaner. It's meaner than D&D. Meaner.
I like that, though.
Yeah, so like it adds a little bit, like you guys got to actually kind of...
Role play,
because if you don't, someone might whip out a gun. And if someone pulls out a gun and John Cole over there doesn't immediately murk them...
Well, I have a lot of, like, notice, though.
Yeah.
Like, I can preemptively know, like, when people are going to do stupid shit.
Pocket sand.
Just stick next to John Cole. He'll take care of you.
Yeah. Mm. So just know it's this game's lethal. And I'm like, I have a plan already for when the first person dies.
I have a plan
for that, because it is going to be it's probably going to be a when, not an if. So just know that I have stuff in my head.
How old is your character, Bobby? 20. Okay.
So we have two adults and three younger.
How old is yours, Lewis?
20.
20. So there's three adults, yeah.
I'm baby.
What are you, 16?
Yeah, and I'm the baby of this group, too.
Yep. You're just a little, like, sapling tree.
I just sprouted my flowers. I just got my flowers.
You're blossoming.
Oh,
so God.
Zora. I look like the Zora race, right?
Yes.
From Legend of Zelda.
Really?
Zelda.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like
cool.
What my people look like.
That's cool. Yeah, I like that.
Fish people.
I like that.
Yeah. Fish.
Stop.
No.
People.
I can
sense I can explicitly here. Say, for Mary's sake, that Tihari can never be crabs.
Thank you, please.
But we can get crabs.
Oh, yeah.
The fish clap. Coming back.
Fish club.
Oh, that is disturbing to think about. Wow.